Hi, I'm Laurie McNeil of McNeil Benefits, and this is Benefits Genius Podcast number 10.
Hey, it's Howard Kettner, and it was a genuine pleasure to have Laurie McNeil introduce the 10th Benefits Genius Podcast. Lori kept me in the business as I was getting started 35 years ago and unselfishly shared his best ideas with me, ideas that moved me from surviving to thriving. And here you are today, Lori, introducing a podcast with fellow Benefits Genius faculty member Dave Patriarch, where we're going to be talking about Dave's plan administrator checklist, how it started, and how it evolved over the past decade. Today is a milestone day because not only is it the fourth podcast with Dave Patriarch, it's my first time visiting with Dave in his Toronto area office. Here we are with my little traveling podcast roadshow, and thank you for joining Dave and me as we move now to chatting about the importance of creating processes and how those processes help you to take care of your clients so that they will take care of you. If you want to understand and articulate the difference between the cost of benefits and the price of benefits, this podcast is for you. We explore Dave's views on the importance of industry mentorship and why it's critical to replace a mindset of scarcity with a mindset of abundance and what that looks like in the context of growing your business. So stay tuned for the wisdom and insights of Dave Patriarch. Well, here we are again, Dave, and we're going to jump into some chat about the plan administrator checklist. And I have been just endlessly intrigued since I attended your breakfast meeting and you walked through it. And what hooked me on it, Dave, was that it's not about product. It's not about price. It's about real people, real business issues. And it's just so different than what one hears in the typical industry event.
It's the stuff that they're talking about every day in their business in little bits and pieces, and just changes the conversation, the tone of the conversation totally when you sit down with a client.
So what I really wanted to do in the podcast today is just roll back the clock. Like, you've been working on this for 10 years and just would love to have you give some context and framing around this amazing tool.
It wasn't that amazing. It was, I kind of joke and say there was no divine intervention here that just brought this down the tablets, you know, to Moses or anything. It was actually closer to about 18 years ago or 19 years ago even that it started. And it was a time where Manulife was removing a bonus from their group benefits program. And the way I remember it anyway, one of their VPs, Barry Noble, who was really influential to me, He put together this event for Toronto and Southern Ontario brokers to all come together. And he said, if I can't spend money on you for bonusing, I'll spend money on you for education. So he brought in accountants and lawyers, employment lawyers, specialists to teach this group of brokers everything they ever wanted to know about group insurance. And it was a 3-day event. We stayed there and were immersed in it. And one of the speakers was Elizabeth Forster, just recently retired from Blaney McMurtry, who was an employment lawyer, and she went through all the things that you could get in trouble with, and that scared me. So I had this kind of list of things I wanted clients to know. At the same time, I'd found that as I spoke to clients every time I left, I always felt that there was things I wish I'd talked about but hadn't done. So putting the two together became the checklist. And Barry at that event actually sat me down over, I think, a glass of wine and said, there's a couple of things you got to know about this business if you're going to succeed. He said, put your clients first, always. And take care of your clients and they'll take care of you. And that's simple. He goes, it's just that simple. That's all you got to do.
And boy, those are words to live by.
Yeah, but it was so simple. And he just, I kind of went, well, of course. And he goes, no, it's not that simple. He said, just always put your clients first. Keep them out of trouble. It's kind of like the Hippocratic Oath for doctors, you know, do no harm. That's as simple as you get. And that's kind of what we need to do as well. And so we kind of put all this together, and the list from the lawyer presenting what she was doing, I put together the things I wanted to talk about, and the first list was born, and it was short. It was less than a page long, and I sent it to the lawyer and said, hey, what do you think of this? And she said, why don't you add one or two more things? And then along the years, it's just added, and every year there's a couple little tweaks when taxation rules change or I find something else is becoming a bigger issue, like people not having government coverage. So we'll, you know, add some updates to it for things like that. And that's kind of how it was born. It's just evolved since then. So it was a few years of screwing up, making mistakes and everything else to realize I needed a tool to keep me on track, and then some great opportunities to put it all together. And it's just grown and blossomed since then. So,
well, I think the magic with it in terms of the logic for using it on a day-to-day basis is nearly endless. But a couple of points that jump out for me is it's been my experience that some of the best salespeople are enormously ADD. And so we don't have a process. There might be some intuition, there might be a bit of this and of that, but it's kind of like the witch doctor's thing. Let's throw some of this in and that.
It's not a speech, it's a hiccup, a burp, and a fart, and all of a sudden you've got something.
Totally. Yeah. And
none of it was intentional. Yeah, it just all worked, yeah.
So as you went out with this process, like, I'm curious, what did it look like at a desktop level? So client one, day one, and the next, prospect. What did it?
Yeah. So when I went into the prostects, originally I kind of still did what I did before, which was kind of selling on price, finding where people weren't happy, what the pain was, what we could do to fix it. And then as I kind of got through a little bit of the conversation, and I'd say, okay, if you have a plan in place, are you doing some of these things? Do you know this stuff? Because I wasn't sure whether employers and plan administrators knew all this or not, because I thought they should, but I didn't know if they really knew it. So we started kind of going down, and I realized that nobody knew anything. And they all seemed to be pretty eager to listen to what I was saying. And so the conversation kind of drifted away of, yeah, we'll get the census data and the details all later. And it was kind of like, oh, well, explain that. Explain this situation. Explain that tax rule. Why is that way? And it was interesting because it really quickly alerted me to great opportunities. One that just comes to mind now was, a broker established a plan. I was asked to come in because the renewal rates were too high, and we were discussing the fact that they had a non-taxable disability plan, but the employer was paying 100%, and it wasn't following the tax rules the way it was written up or administered. And so I said to the person, well, that breaks all the rules, so we have a problem. And then as we went through, we found another issue where they had non-employees on the plan, and so all of a sudden the list was, hey, this is just a general list. This isn't made for you, but your brokers put you in these situations of risk. And all of a sudden I went, oh, well, I now see this as another kind of a tool, because it's identifying what people know and don't know and the situations they've gotten into that they didn't realize they were getting into. So it's kind of evolved along the way, and how now it's not quite my leading thing, but it's pretty close. Usually I kind of go in and say, okay, tell me about why I'm here, what's brought me here today, what are you unhappy with, or, you know, why did this phone call happen to get me in here? And along the way, we'll talk about the list and everything that comes with it.
Now, clearly, you use this not only with prospects, but with clients.
Yep. Every client signs off on it every year, at renewal time.
Every year.
Every year. We don't always review it in full every year. We'll highlight some of the changes and stuff like that. Clients that I've had for 15 years that have not changed a single employee in 10, they just know, okay, everything, all the rules are the same. Great. If I ever hire anybody, you'll be the first person I call before I put anything in writing or put them on the plan. So we have a conversation and kind of bring them up to speed. Some clients, we review it every year. We use it with new plan administrators. We use it with maybe somebody else from finance or something is getting involved in the benefits, and we'll use it to train them and stuff like that.
That's just crazy good.
Works.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what was the reason behind you sharing it out. Like, I mean, a lot of times we develop a little something like that, and now that's my secret sauce. That's my unfair advantage in strategic coach vernacular, my unfair advantage in this marketplace.
There's no secrets of this business. Everything's been done for 30 years already. So the lawyer shared it with me, and so I just figured I would just share it with other people as well. And there's nothing, when people look at the list, everyone learns one or two things going through it. But most of the stuff is not a secret. Like, if you actually sat down and put it all together and asked a bunch of people, you could do a list that's twice as long with more things. But I honestly was just selfish. I thought, okay, if I share it, then maybe people will find the flaws with it and add more questions or more comments or more points that should be added to the list. And they have. Over the years, people, including Michael, your son, just shared with me his list and said, you know, here's the things that I've added. He's got some stuff that isn't on mine, because it relates to like union business and collective bargaining agreements that I don't deal with usually. And so my list has gotten better and better and better over the years for sharing it and having other people share back with me.
It's so interesting in that it steers it away from, again, the product and the price discussion. Yeah. And but how do those parts fit into it?
Well, I think I've said this one before, but... and I'm going to steal the idea that was stolen from me in the best of ways. Zoltan Barzo, who's a great broker just outside Toronto, Mississauga, he uses a similar kind of list that he's built up over the years. And he says there's a price to benefits and there's the cost of benefits. And the price is what you pay every month. That's the premium. The cost of administering your benefits wrong is immense. So it could be lawsuits that are worth millions or tens of thousands or wrongful dismissals and HR kind of nightmare stuff. And so when you sit down and you say, okay, we're going to talk about your benefit price, we're not really going to talk about the premium. We're going to talk about the cost. So the list is going to try and minimize liability as much as possible. And the premium is, well, we're going to make sure it's fair, but just that it's fair. So we're at the end of the day, we're not trying to be the cheapest. If you want to be the cheapest, then you're the person driving on tires that have 150,000 kilometers and are going to blow any minute. That's not the goal. We want somebody to be in a safe, Volvo or whatever car. Right. And so we're trying to provide good value for the money, a fair price on their benefits. But we want to make sure that the cost is not greater than what they think they're getting into. So that's that. And product-wise, when you get to the end of it, I actually use price to define product. So when we talk to a case where there's no benefits and they're putting in for the first time, we'll talk about what the renewal rates are going to be like before they've agreed to the sale, because I want them to be able to afford it next year, not just this year. So we then say, okay, there's liability, there's risk. We're going to sit down and say, okay, if your plan costs you $1,000 today, it's going to probably cost you $1,250 next year, because first-year renewals on small groups are always big. So if that plan design is not, if that's too much next year and the plan design is too rich, then let's scale it down now. And then let's make sure we educate you well to administer it well. And you can always grow it over time and add more to the plan, but going the other way is difficult. So product is kind of way down the list. Like, the last thing we look at is their employee booklet and what their plan design is, unless there's a problem. If they identify a problem before we get to the rest of the conversation, then that's a whole other story. It may rise to the top. But reducing liability in the list is pretty key.
Well, what you just went through there in terms of the talking about the renewal when you're putting that plan in for the first time, I think that applies to every aspect of the benefits plan. And it's something that I tell you, I mean, it just about took me out of the business when I first learned it. So here I have, I'm just proud as punch, 10 feet tall and bulletproof, because I've landed my first over 500 life group in my first year in the group insurance business. Like, I've cashed the commission check now.
Everybody's dream. You just hit it, man. You hit the jackpot.
It totally. And it's rainbows and lollipops and sunshine forever and all of that stuff. And so my client goes into, and you just mentioned union benefits. They go into union negotiations. And one of the things that came out of across the table at the plan sponsor was, we want orthodontics. This particular employer did not have an orthodontics plan in. So I do my best broker thing, and I go trucking back to the insurer that was covering the dental plan, and I said, how much to add orthodontics? And I remember it like it was yesterday. 50 cents per primary insured. And we can break it out, single and family for you want, 25 and 75 or whatever. But they're in negotiations, so you can take this concept to them. Wow, this is it. I got it right from the underwriter. We're good to go. Two thumbs up. I relay the information. Of course, the employer says yes to that demand. Like, holy cow, we can get one item scrubbed off and a checklist mark put there. We're done with that item. And then comes the first renewal. And a $5 bump attributable solely to the orthodontics, the pent-up demand. Of course, I'm older and wiser, 3 and 5 and 10 years later. Yeah. Well, that just about got me fired.
Yeah.
And so with the heat on me now, of course, I bounce off of my client and go back to the insurer and go, how did this happen? And they said, well, no, nobody had put the plan in. And so now the truth comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
And about cost me my biggest client.
And these days that would be just somebody pricing aggressively to get the case.
Sure.
And we see the same thing with people undercutting cases by 20 or 30%. And it's non-sustainable. You can't do the renewal because you're going to kill the client right off the bat. Forget that it's underpriced. The fact that pent-up demand, dental, anything that's discretionary, like dental, paramedics, vision, claims will go through the roof for the first year. You know? So it's a common mistake, and we see it every single day. People just overload it. And part of the problem is brokers, and I've been that person too. We tend to, if there's an opportunity, we resort to being order takers. So if somebody walks in and says, that, like your case, I want orthodontics, and you go, great, I'll do that. And then you get the price and you go, here you go. And they go, great. And everybody's great. And nobody kind of stops to say, hold on, do you really want orthodontics? Because that's going to be another inflation driver. That's going to be something that differentiates single people from family people. Is that really a good thing? Or do we give everybody a health spending account? We didn't have them back then. But
right.
And I think so. Our role has got to be more consultant, more partner to say, you know what? Maybe just doing that orthodontics thing isn't the thing you want to do. Or if you're going to do it, let's phase it in and, you know, maybe just keep it a lower benefit to start. And I don't think very many brokers, advisors, consultants do that. They never slow down. They take the order and then kind of deal with the repercussions are later. You can sell it, but you can't ship it. It's like the old Windows thing, you know.
Yeah.
They can build an operating system, but it's not going to work, and they're going to get the new one out so that you buy it, but it's going to take a year before it's, you know, running. Well, that's not a great way to build client and customer service appreciation on any level.
Well, and you know, I've been asking the question more and more frequently recently to the seasoned advisors in the industry. What is it that the new advisor needs to know? So I'm sitting there with our good buddy, Rob Crowder today. And I posed the question and he just looked at me and kind of went, a better quality of question. That's what the new advisor needs. So if I had drilled one question deeper with the insurer on that orthodontics and had the background that you've just given about what, you know, do the renewal before you do the quotation.
Yeah, I don't even know if it has to be a better quality of question. You just got to ask the question and keep asking questions and listen to the answers, obviously. But the question, and everybody has a problem when I say this is the question you should ask. If you're in, you're into the prospective client, why am I here? Tell me why I'm here. And they'll usually say, well, you called me and wanted to be here, or somebody said I had to talk to you. But no, why'd you let me have an appointment? You're a busy guy or a girl, like you're a person. You, there's a reason that you brought me in today. So what is it? Well, we're not happy with our rates. Okay, what does that mean? Does it mean you're not happy with the plan design you have? Does it mean your claims are really high? What is it that you're really unhappy with? Because, you know, overall, the cost of something going up in and of itself is not the thing that's driving it. Like, there's more to this story. So help me understand. Have you grown and you weren't expecting this? Because if you're expecting it to go up 10% every year and it really went up like average 4 or 5%, you wouldn't be unhappy. So what, you know, what's going on? And there's simple questions, who, what, where, when, why, you know, and I think we just have to keep asking those questions to really get to the core of the problem, the issue, and then create the solution if we can.
Absolutely. And it's part of the conversation that Rob and I were having is surprise prevention.
Yeah.
For your client. Like no client likes to be surprised.
Yeah.
And I surprised my client when I came walking in the door with the $5 renewal increase when they had no budget for that sort of thing. And I knew they had no budget. And so here I am. And so the wisdom of what you just said about asking questions and just being insanely curious and drilling down, particularly for the new advisor. I mean, here I am hanging on by a thread in my kind of second or third year in the business. Yeah. And I've told the story, agent number 75 in a town of 75,000 people. So what does that spell? Reputation is everything. So if I'm known as the guy that delivered a surprise for a client that had no budget for surprises, there goes my reputation.
Yeah. And reputation is everything in this business. It's a small world, even if you're dealing across Canada. And those first years, we all struggle. Like I've got a chart here on my wall in my office that kind of reminds me of the growth. And I mean, the first year I think I made $5,000 and the second year was 25 or something.
What a great chart.
But yeah. And then all of a sudden, kind of along the way, we started CGIB in its old version, and my business kind of got put on hold for a few years, and it provided a little bit of revenue after a few years. And then once I kind of got back to the business again, off I went again, and the numbers took off. And you just kind of go, there's always that struggle at the beginning. And we all, that order taker thing, it's simple. If somebody says they want it, we try and do it. We try and keep everybody happy. And I think if we're really partners, just like parents, we have to say no sometimes. And we have, sure. And I say that to clients all the time, and they laugh and they go, hold on, is this role reversal? I've told you I want to enhance my plan. I've given you the reason why, and you've told me, no, you don't think it's appropriate, and we're not going to do that. And I'm like, yeah. And the client looks at me and goes, you understand that I'm the client. I'm the one paying. You should listen to me. I'm like, you're the client today. You're going to be my adversarial enemy a year from now when you can't pay for it. So let's try and find a way that gets your goal of giving something to your employees. And maybe it's a bonus. Maybe you just pay a cash bonus to your employees that is a one-year thing. And if you're this great next year, then next year, let's not give them a bonus. Let's enhance the benefits. You're a hero 2 years in a row. But if you don't do a bonus every year, you're not a bad guy. If you take away benefits a year from now, you're a bad guy.
Totally.
And that, I want to avoid that. I want life easy. So it's a slow growth curve. Like, we're not getting rich overnight selling benefits, except for you selling the 500 life case, of course. but I mean, it's a slow build. And if your reputation is good, you don't have to work as hard at it as many other lines of business. You don't have to keep making sales over and over again. You're just renewing the relationship every year. That's it.
Well, I like the road you just went down there in terms of bonus or benefits.
Yeah.
So it's hard, and I get the part as an advisor to kind of say, no, we're not going to enhance the product. I'm not going to get an extra sale. I'm not going to be the hero when I go back to the office for having sold this. But I see it as being more and more as being a business solutions,
yeah,
not benefit solutions. What is the outcome that you actually want Ms. Yep. client as the result of this enhancement to the benefits plan?
I want her to respect me and trust me and see me as a partner. So when I say no to a sale, then people stop and listen. Like, I mean, when you say, this is what I do for a living and I'm not going to do it, then people go, well, maybe I should be listening to this. I really think that sitting down and kind of helping them understand and saying, I'm looking out for you, I'm looking out for your employees, but you're my client. So we're talking about total business solutions. So if your goal is to do something great for your employees, okay, great. And benefits, yeah, some people have been asking for more, but not all the employees have. And the plan's a good plan, and it's designed well, and it's not a Cadillac of plans, but it's a good plan. Actually, are we ever going to change that phrase, Cadillac of plans? Is it going to be the Tesla of plans? We're going to say that soon? Because Cadillacs aren't Cadillacs anymore.
No.
The other day, I referenced a Lada, and that was just, nobody knew what I was talking about. Okay, the Tesla of plans. Then you just kind of go, you get a bit more respect, because what you're doing is saying, I know you're going to spend the money. I know you want to recognize your employees, but I think maybe there's better short-term solutions that don't lock you in quite so much. And quite often we'll have the conversation, and you know, a year from now I'll end up making the enhancement anyway. So all I've done is deferred my increase and deferred my my commission and everything else along the way, and that's not a bad thing. But they totally trust me because I walked away. And I also get new clients that way all the time. When you walk away, from a prospective client and say it's not a good fit, and you stand up and start to walk out of the room, and they go, well, why? We like each other. Oh, we like each other, but the way you administer your plan doesn't work for me. So they will listen to you, the person walking away from the sale, rather than any broker walking into the sale every single time. Trust and respect is huge.
And those stories are so valuable, because I think of starting in this business, if I had to start over again today, where would I go for that mentoring? And so
you're
many
here,
of the
man.
Schools,
you're here.
Well, yeah. and likewise, yeah. and I think that an avenue to share out the stories, and for our audience, I just want to say, if there's ways that the stories can be shared out more different and better, because I'm only here because of people that so unselfishly shared their stories with me. I mean, I was starving as an agent. The guy that brought me into the business was easily the best salesperson ever, because he convinced me to come into the business, and literally within a month, he left the business for good.
Yeah, kind of scary.
And so now my closest manager was 500 miles away or something like that. And so here I am, an agent for the Prudential of England, and I'm dying. And Brian Ironside, who later came on to Manulife fame and ran the big office in Edmonton, et cetera, as the head of the local Manulife agent, tucked me under his wing and said, if there's anything you need, Howard, just come to me. And it was because I was stumbling into his life underwriter training class every Monday afternoon with my eyes glazed over and in shock and awe from my last rejection. And so that sort of thing, I think, is all part of it, bringing perspective to how to handle things.
Well, it's funny. Somebody, when we started CGIB and started this little association to bring people together, people said, what you've just done is recreated an independent career agency system. Like in the old days, the London Lifes and the Mutual Lifes and whatever, everybody, they all had these things where the old guys got together with the young kids and everybody, all guys back then. And
sure, journeymen and apprentices,
totally.
Really.
And like you shared the stories, centuries. You sent them out, you said, this is a waste of time, that's a good one, here's why, and so on. And that disappeared when everybody kind of demutualized and the career agency system almost disappeared. I mean, there's still a little bit left. So now you have all these people going out there looking, and there isn't a lot of sources for information. And our business is really bad at mentoring, whether it's inside the insurance companies, whether it's inside brokerages. Everybody tends to be a little bit greedy and not give up, and that's a huge flaw. So had you reached out to 10 brokers in your business back then when you were starting, they would have shunned you, most probably. You got lucky with some insurance company people like I did, who I just picked their brains day and night, and they kind of got me through the beginning, and then some friends that were in the business that helped, and then that circle got bigger and bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden we're doing podcasts. So,
Well, and it's an interesting mindset shift, because I think that it's very easy to fall into a whole scarcity mentality as opposed to abundance. And I mean, just you and I, we've tweaked little ideas and tossed them back and forth. And I find that every time I toss something over the wall to you, it'll come back to me, but with an enhancement or two added. And so then I look at it, stare at it on my shelf for a couple of days and go, maybe we could tweak it for this as well. And again, that's the magic. I want to keep circling back to the plan administrator checklist, because the thought that it just spawned for me is, you know, that's but one of several checklists to talk to our audience about. Like, what about the product checklist?
Yep.
You know, and again, it comes out from this dialogue I was having with Rob. It's kind of like, okay, so you want to enhance your X, and to your point, why? What are you hoping as for the end result? Well, to create a checklist again to go through and question people. So Rob's telling me today about this case that they stripped out the life insurance. Like, why have 25,000 life insurance? Why give people the illusion that there's life coverage.
Good point.
You're on your own for life insurance.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Yeah.
And Rob says it like 100 times better than I can, but he says, what we want to do is protect. This is the employer speaking.
Yeah.
Somebody that goes across the street for Tim Hortons, their mind is not on where their feet are going, and they get hit by the proverbial bus. For those folks, them and their families have not had a chance at all to do some planning. We want to take the financial pressure right off, so there's $250,000 of AD&D. And I went, wow. Now, I wish I'd had that idea.
Yeah, there's a few of them. And you kind of go, what are you trying to solve? What's the problem? What's the purpose? And it's funny because we always think we know the answer. And yet I'm surprised by how often we don't really. So sometimes you're saying, okay, it's to attract and retain employees. We want a good package. And you're saying, well, we just want to be better than the next guy because we pay like crap, but we want to have benefits that are better than the next guy. Somebody else is like, oh, it's all about tax advantageous compensation and stuff. And you get these real paternalistic people that say, you know what, like you said, my employees haven't planned for anything. They don't plan for anything. I've got to take care of them. So it's going to be, you know, all this and more. And if we can do it tax effectively, that's great. And if we can, you know, do this and that, that's great. And I think we have to listen to that. I'm not saying they're always right, because if you ask an employer, so an employer that's maybe not the owner, maybe it's an HR person, and they see themselves as an employee first, they'll say the very most important benefit is dental. The second most important is vision. And then down the road from there, and life doesn't matter, disability doesn't matter, and catastrophic drugs doesn't matter, because they just don't see it. They're young, invincible. Well, they're not right. Those, you know, are they right in their particular situation today? Yes. But that's why you buy insurance, is for the stuff that happens tomorrow. And so sometimes you kind of go, the client is wrong. And we have to kind of make them aware that I don't know anyone who lost their home because of a really bad dental bill. But I can tell you disability, life, catastrophic drug claims and health claims that have cost people huge. So I think even if people haven't experienced it, they have to understand that experience. So,
It's really interesting, digging down into the stories, and you're just saying, you know, keep asking the questions. And, you know, I'm sure that every advisor could tell 100 anecdotal stories about what happened on that day that they asked the question, but I think it's remembering to do that every day. And so the plan administrator checklist forces a discipline around asking questions. And one of my favorite stories is, I happened to be in one of those frames of mind one day where I was actually properly focused on the meeting and prepared to ask a bunch of questions because I'd gone in to visit a large commercial truck wrecking yard operation, multiple locations, and that's what these folks specialized in. So they'd break them all down, and so now they have these used parts and the whole thing that goes along with it. And so I knew I was getting the brush off and the brush out the door if I went into a product discussion, just by some early meeting stage comments that were being made by a couple of folks in the room. And so it was kind of like, well, what's your biggest business challenge? Well, it turned out there was employee turnover. Well, what does that look like? Where is the employee turnover? Is it here or is it there? And I'd hung around growing up with nothing but used cars, had hung around my share of auto parts. So I kind of was genuinely curious, keeping those. I remember I got my very first car, and I don't know what it was, $300 worth of something.
Yeah.
Went out on the first weekend and got rough with it and blew the transmission.
Yeah.
First car.
So the next weekend you learned how to replace transmission.
Well, I went to my dad, and it was just kind of like, Dad, I think I have a blown transmission. And he just paused long enough to look at me and say, well, you know where the auto wreckers are. Like, what are you coming to me with?
Different world now, but it's true.
Totally. Yeah. And so, okay, yeah, I know where I'm going. So talking to these folks, and they said, here's the issue. We've got folks behind the parts counter that cannot be replaced, at least at this stage, by a computer. These are the guys that will remember when they look up. So the guy has come in. Here's the story. A guy comes in from out of town, 100 miles or 100 kilometers, to get a transmission for a 19-something Mack truck.
Yeah.
And the guy looks at it on the computer and goes, we have that part, but you know, there's something wrong here. I just need to check something for you because this guy is a parts professional. Like this is what he does. Yeah. This is his trade. He knows his business. He actually remembers serial numbers and part numbers. And there's guys like that.
Yep.
Like they can go 11 digits and it's in their brain. And he goes, you know what? In that particular model year, they switched the type of transmission halfway through the year. And so I've got to figure out, was yours a first half of the year or second half of the year? Because before I send you 100 miles and it's the wrong thing and you come driving back into town having lost another day of production and take it all out on me and the owner here, I've got to check some stuff. And the owner is saying, those guys are few and far between. But here's the deal. Many of those guys that have that unique ability, well, there's some other flaws in their life. They're two or three marriages later, and they're a bit transient, and they're a bit biker gang, and they'll come to work and they'll show up for 100 days, first thing in the morning to last thing at night, and then they don't come in on Friday, and we never see them again. And I'm raising my eyebrows now. So what's the story? And he says, here's the deal. A couple of those wives, ex-wives, have caught up to where they are because they've been bouncing off alimony checks.
Yeah.
And so now there's somebody threatening them that you're working for nothing. Your entire wage is gone every month.
Yeah.
So he said, we need somebody that will tell them the maximum you can garnish is this percent. Here's how you budget. And I know this has been your life to this point, but it's going to get a lot better if you go to this. Well, you know what? I actually had this amazing employee and family assistance program solution in my pocket, but I would have never gone to that story. I would have never led with that as a solution in 100 years. I would have gone something like, we do this and this and this and this, and our billing system does that. And we have an EAP, by the way, and out the door. And I would have been out the door along with everybody else. Boom. It was so done when I said, our specialists can help you with your retention problem. And it's the questions.
Yeah. And you just have to keep asking them. It doesn't stop at the sale. It continues. And one of my kind of fun clients, they're in the fast food business. And the HR person that I was involved with and the president of the company, when they came into Canada, we put in a plan that was unique. They wanted a guaranteed cost over the first 5 years of whatever employee's cost was going to be. And they'd seen traditional benefits at the time go up 12, 15% a year. This is, about 17 years ago when we were kind of hitting crazy inflation numbers on plans. And they said, we don't want that. We want something that's different, that's unique, that is a bit more affordable, but totally controllable. So we built a hybrid health spending account plan for them. And so it did the job. And they had hundreds and hundreds of employees, and that all went well. And about a year in, we did the first renewal, and the new VP of finance was there, and the HR person was there. And we said, you know, is the plan doing what you wanted? It's a year in, let's kind of do an analysis. And the president was extremely happy. The HR person was extremely happy. And the finance person said, I'm not happy. And I said, okay, why aren't you happy? He said, why did you build this plan the way you did it? And we said, well, the president and the HR person wanted a plan that was affordable, that was controlled cost, that would attract and retain employees, and that didn't have the same cost as a traditional plan. He goes, we don't want to attract and retain employees. Where'd you get that idea? And I said, what do you mean? And the HR person's like looking. He goes, we want to attract an employee, an okay employee that's going to last at the most 3 years. We don't want a 10-year employee here. These are turnover jobs, low income. We want to pay minimum wage price for these people. And in 3 years, they're going to be too expensive for what they're doing. So we want natural attrition. We don't want to invest in these people. We don't want them to grow old with us. That's not our job. We want somebody who can put out the fast food, who does it. Students are great. Seniors are great. Part-time labor is great. Transient labor is great. We don't want long-term people. And they went through a major shift, and they reduced coverage to their employees and just did a management and executive program, and no one really cared. It didn't really make that much of a difference. And their cost dropped dramatically, and they enhanced the management program and everything else so that as the employees moved up, the ones that they did want to keep, the managers and the executives, then they got compensated. Well, if I'd gone on the basis of the first answer for the first year, it's a totally different answer now. And there's a bit of a power struggle, obviously, between the VP finance and the VP of HR But in the end, they figured it out, and on we go with that modified plan to this day.
I've come to saying recently, as folks have asked me about the Benefits Genius program, like, what is it? And I'll say something like, well, you know, it's what I wish I had had in terms of information or knowledge or whatever in my first year in the business, my third, my fifth, my 25th. And what you just said, I mean, that's one of those things I could have used about my 20th year in the business. I went in to see a client that had been a client for at least 10 years. And I thought I had done this great job of plan and cost analysis. And I went in to tell them that they were benchmarking in terms of plan design way below 90% of my other clients. Like, they were just way down there. And so I'd actually put a fair amount of time, thought, and effort based around an assumption that they would be appreciative of this knowledge. And guess what I got back? I have a response virtually identical to yours. Yeah. It was in the airline industry. And so this was a small regional carrier. And they said, and it was, they couldn't help but be condescending because their benefit plan expert was showing an incredible naivety around their business.
Yeah.
And they said to me, you know what the best benefit is here? And I'm going, dental, health, disability, you know, whatever. And they said, 3,500 hours. And so I have this blank look. And they said,
which I have right now.
One of our pilots gets 3,500 hours, they apply to WestJet and they go big league.
Yeah.
And that's the best benefit we can give them. And we know that they're gone at 3,500 hours. So do you think we want to be the folks, like, they took great pains to really rub it in then. Do you think we want to be the folks that have given them the dental work for the rest of their life?
Yeah.
No, we'll leave that to WestJet.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, whoa,
yeah.
I knew nothing about my client's business.
And that's huge.
And so in some fashion, that's what actually helped me survive. The bit I did in the industry is there was three or four competitors. We'd actually lock up once a quarter. We'd take a hotel room, like a giant hotel space in Victoria, a condo, and we'd spend a day and a half talking about common industry stuff. And I don't know, you know, I don't see, and I mean, we would admit really embarrassing stuff to each other. It was a safe environment for it. And I often wonder today, where's that safe environment?
So I had that too. I was really lucky. My past life, I sold memberships for the Chambers of Commerce and Boards of Trade in our area. And so I got to know lots about small business people. And one of the big things I spoke about was group insurance because of the Chamber of Commerce group plan. So it got me working with these brokers all the time. And I went, hey, this is what I want to do, you know, in my next life. My next life came along a little prematurely, a little earlier than expected, when my contract was severed. So at the time, Dean Teasdale said, I'll teach you everything you need to know about group insurance over three lunches at the Purple Pig in Aurora, which is a great little place. It's not there anymore. And between he, Kevin Walwork, and Ralph Bellamy, we'd go out and golf every now and then, and I'd ask every stupid question too, and they'd laugh at me, you know, quite often because they were stupid questions, but they were great in helping getting me going. And really, they were probably the core of what started the original breakfast group that grew into, you know, a group called GBG.
I was wondering how that started.
Yeah, so it was four people who kind of grew to six to eight, and we get together for
lunch. That is so cool.
No different than your, you know, Victoria condo or Vancouver
condo.
Yeah,
but we didn't spin it out beyond that. We'd kept it very exclusive, and what happened is it died.
Yeah, and the problem I had was I never had all the answers. They didn't have all the answers. We had to find another person who had another answer. So the group kind of got bigger and bigger, and then it was just brokers. And then one day we're all hashing around something, and somebody says, well, Sun Life does this, and somebody else says, no, they don't, and somebody else says, no, they used to, but they don't anymore, and somebody said, no, they didn't used to, but they do now, and so we said, hey, you know what we should do? We should invite one of the Sun Life reps to come out to this breakfast, and they can maybe straighten us out on this, and so it evolved again, and now it wasn't just brokers, now it was insurance company reps and TPAs and stuff, so it kind of evolved along that way, but you're right, it wasn't... there wasn't a lot of people. I was really lucky. I had those guys, and they probably looked at me like I was not a real big threat to them or anything. And, you know, in the end, they're the only guys I have hands-off deals with in the whole industry. I've got lots of guys I respect and I would walk away from their client if I stumbled into it.
Sure.
But these guys, I would never, like, no matter what, because they helped get me in the business, I would never touch their clients. And actually, Dean's runs a chamber area, and I pass business to him all the time that better fits a chamber than it does me and things like that. So it's, but there isn't putting yourself out there, being vulnerable and telling a group of your competitors that you don't know what you're doing and that you made a mistake on a case or on a call or whatever is hard, because nobody wants to look vulnerable. Nobody wants to look stupid. Nobody wants to admit that, you know, you've made all these mistakes. And, you know, we talked in the last seminar about, you know, giving people a tool and knowing how to use it. And nobody wants to feel like you've told them something, you've shared something great with them and they don't know how to use it. And then you've shared it again with them and then you've shown them how to use it and they still don't know how to use it.
You know, I think one of the things that it boils down to for me is it took me a long time to move out of a scarcity. Like, I need each and every client that has a pulse, or however we put it, could fog a mirror, and realize that there were all sorts of clients if I didn't have, if I wasn't bankrupt of listening skills, really. And so some of the best long-term relationships came about in working with folks that should have been technically my competitors. And it took me a long, long time to define who my real competitors were. And finally, I decided that I had no competitors except for the hobbyists that were just generally doing a disservice to the industry. And I had to fight to establish myself as a professional. And occasionally, the large national firms that would take a shot at me on the basis of, we have an economy of scale that Howard doesn't have, which of course was completely false. Yeah. But I would have to go to great pains to demonstrate that, in fact, that wasn't the case. And after that, it turned out that every time I sat down with a competitor and we had a frank discussion about industry issues, common issues that our clients were facing, I came away the richer for solutions. I remember sitting in Vancouver, and it was one of those, I was pretty guarded, having come out of a small community where it was kind of hold all your ideas close to your chest. And I'm sitting there with Ralph Johnstone, the founder of Johnstone's Insurance. And Ralph says, very much like you do to me, Howard, how can I help you with your business? Yeah. And Ralph says to me, so Howard, like, what's on your mind? What could I do to help you? And I said, my biggest issue, Ralph, right now is I need somebody to really oversee the improvement of administrative services that we offer to our clients. Knowing that Ralph couldn't answer that, couldn't help me with that in 100 years. What was he going to do? Give me his plan administrator or something? And he said, you know, Howard, you know who the best person in the city is around that. And I said, not really. Like, I'm new into Vancouver. I'm still trying to sort out who's who. And he said, well, it's Felicity Haynes over at Great West. And I said, oh, well, could you introduce me? And he said, Howard, forget it. He said, she's been there. She has a plum job.
She's a lifer.
Not a chance. Yeah. And you can't afford her anyway. So I said, well, you know, any other names? So he gives me like 3 other names. So I contact the 3 other names, work through the list for various reasons. Either they weren't interested or I wasn't interested. It wasn't going to work. So I reach out to Felicity. Well, 17 years later, she celebrated 17 years with our organization.
Yeah.
It turns out that the money was great, the tenure was great, the position was great. She was looking for something else, and she had never told anybody what that something else was. She was looking for a shorter commute, a smaller team, less bureaucracy.
She might not even have known until you put it in front of her.
Right? Exactly. Like,
yeah, totally.
And so here it was, 2 competitors talking, and came away with an idea that really launched us from that point on. When I was prospecting and would say to a client, you know who the person is that actually oversees all the admin services that I'm committing to delivering? Here, let me share her resume with you. And they would go, wow, done. I mean, I could quit selling right at that point. And it's just crazy. But if 2 competitors hadn't had a frank discussion, how that would have changed my life.
sharing, we hear it all the time. We've both talked about this with different brokers that say they're not going to share their best idea. They're not going to share in a group setting because they feel uncomfortable and everybody's got their thing that's their private thing. And I say there's nothing that's new in this business anymore. It's all been around so many times. And a line I use from time to time is sharing is selfish. And I say that because when you share and give up everything, you open yourself up, admittedly, but people share back and you get more than you give. And it sounds counterproductive. It sounds counterintuitive. But when you give away your best stuff, people come up. If I'm speaking at a seminar, people will come up afterwards and go, they think they're being critical and they'll go, you know what, your list is pretty good, but you forgot this, this, and this. And I go, that's great. And here's some reasons why I don't have them on my list, but they should be on yours. And real life inside, I'm going, oh, that's a good one. I'm going to add that, or I'm going to alter this. And you get more than you give out.
It's that crazy reciprocity thing. I mean, your audience doesn't want to be viewed as takers only. I mean, they want to give back. Like, I have something of value here. Give a minute to listen to my idea.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. Sometimes. And I mean, there's lots that share at lots of the events and stuff. And there's a lot that sit there silently. And they think that they've got one over on everybody because they're just taking. And they will never speak up. They'll never, put anything out there. And they're missing the boat. And I think you ahead of me and me, and we're so lucky to have picked this business.
Oh.
I mean, there's good days and bad days, just like anything. But overall, I say it all the time. I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky. I got these great clients. They're some of the best ones in the country. I've had some bad clients. I've fired them along the way. I've had clients that we haven't aligned and agreed, and they've asked me to leave, or I've asked them to leave because it wasn't a good fit. But I really kind of think that I'm so lucky that I've had the mentors that have brought me along. I've had the competitors, the brokers, my CGIB members, people that attend the seminars, you, all these different people that have, played a part over the years, and to give us great learning opportunities. And I think maybe that's a whole thing in itself is you've got to appreciate that you're getting learning opportunities. If you kind of think that people are just being critical of you and shut down, then you're not going to learn. And you're not going to benefit from it. I think we're very, very lucky. And my wife, Joanne, every now and then reminds me that my other line that I always say of I'm always lucky is the luckiest people I know in the world are the ones that work the hardest for it. And whether it's putting yourself out there, whether it's volunteering, whatever, we're all really lucky. And we have to create those opportunities for things. And sharing is a great way to do it. Getting together with your competitor is fantastic, and unfortunately too many people think it's a negative thing, and I kind of go, bring it on, give me the opportunity. So much so that I'll put my clients up in front of a room of 100 brokers because I kind of go, I'm not concerned. So we've had clients out to
that's an abundance mentality.
Well, I've got one of my clients who actually comes out. She's an HR person, and Sabrina, she's great. And I asked her recently, I said, would you speak at one of my events? Because she's seen a whole lot of stuff, unionization. She's seen mergers and acquisitions and spinoffs of companies. She's seen so much from an employer standpoint that I think would be great for brokers to see all the stuff that an employer sees, not just the same old company doing the same old thing, right, but one that's gone through all that. And she's attended many of my seminars out in the room.
That's cool.
So I said, hey, I'm going to have to get you up on the stage one day. And she's like, yeah, I'll do it. And I'm like, great. You don't mind being in front of 100, 150 brokers? Nah, that's great. Be a lot of fun. And so one day we'll see her maybe up on stage.
Oh, looking forward to it.
Yeah. So,
well, what a great spot to kind of wrap up for today. So here's to the kind of luck that's generated through hard work and sharing. And I think we couldn't wish anything better for this industry.
Thanks for having me back here again. This is fun.
Well, thank you for coming back again. And it is a ton of fun. And I've enjoyed it. I hadn't shared out with our audience that we're doing this podcast right out of your office. This is where the magic happens.
Flew all the way from Vancouver to the big town of Thornhill. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we'll look forward to doing it all over again soon.